It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 460. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Is brought to you in part by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free at www.instanthousecall.com. Use the promo code Mike Tech Show, all one word. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. Got a stack of email for later in the show. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Have two great voicemails recommending the same utility. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow. Send me a friend request on Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow. And of course, we have the wiki, mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all of the past shows and all the audio and the show notes. That's a great resource. We're going to start out tonight with something that I was able to start the resolution process with some help from everybody in the chat. I have a client that their Google email was shut down due to sending too many messages. And of course, they're not sending those messages. And we were working on this yesterday. I did not have admin access to their dashboard. That person was traveling. I finally got the password. And then it dawned on me, wow, they could have been hacked. And I mean, obviously they were. I thought cleaning all the systems that they used yesterday was going to stop the mail from being sent, but it did not stop it. Cleaning all the systems doesn't help. You have to reset the password. I don't know why I didn't reset it yesterday, and it just dawned on me today, and as everybody in the chat was so helpful, they said, Mike, check the activity of the account. Make sure to reset the password, and I've actually reset it a couple times. When you get a message that you're being shut down or you can't send, and it's very obvious the Google administrator, the system admin automatic response that comes back to you when you try to send a message like that, gives a very specific error message. It's very clear. Now, if you log in to the admin dashboard for your Google Apps account, it will tell you that this account has been suspended and why, and you can click and you can learn more. So it was very helpful. I got to see, okay, their messages, they're abusing the quota from Google because their password has been compromised. So I immediately reset the password, but that's not enough. You need to go in to your account, and when you log into on the web for Google, and I have never used this until tonight, at the lower right-hand side of the screen, it says last account activity, and under it, there's a details link. Click that. It'll show you all of the details of when that account was accessed. And I could not believe it. All of the different countries that were listed in my client's activity that they were currently sending spam out and using that her password, you have the option to sign out all other sessions. And it's a big button that you can click. I clicked that, and now I'll continue to monitor it again. And it's always good that, you know, after you've cleared all the activity in the sessions, reset the password again. So that's exactly what I did, and make it a complex password that a dictionary attack will not be able to compromise the password. And you know mine, and I know people disagree, they want it longer. The minimum password should have 8 characters, an upper, a lowercase, a symbol, and a number. You got to have them all. That is a strong password. That's exactly what I've set. I left my client a voicemail message. I didn't have her cell phone number, but I had one of her partner's cell phones. This is a law firm. So I got the cell phone number, and I've just left her a message that I've reset her password. And then tomorrow, I'll make sure that all of her devices and all of her systems have the passwords. I also want to know all of the systems that she was using. Now, it's interesting. She was overseas, and I just have a feeling she was in Paris. I have a feeling that she was somewhere where she was using a Wi-Fi that was open with her phone and checking her mail, and that probably compromised. You know, that's so easy to sniff out from a Wi-Fi, to sniff out an email password. You don't even need sophisticated tools. Wireshark will do that sitting on a public Wi-Fi. So keep that in mind and make sure that you protect everything, and especially going overseas. One of more advice in the chat was, hey, Mike, make sure she changes all of her passwords. She has to change her passwords to everything. All of her bank accounts, anything that she goes online and uses, she has to change those passwords. You want to do that on a regular basis, but certainly if you know that one password has been compromised, change them all. Look at this as an alert. Take a look at your email activity occasionally, especially if you're using Gmail. It's so easy to just click on that details URL link, and it will bring up everything in detail so you can see where your email is being accessed and when and what was used. What, you know, was it a browser? Which browser even? Was it POP? Was it IMAP? Was it SMTP? I want to thank everybody in the chat room for helping me diagnose and resolve this problem for a client. So that's why I wanted to share that right away with everybody. I received 2 voicemails recommending the same sync utility. I'm going to play them both. Here's the first one. This is one of those utilities that I am absolutely going to test out and use. Give a listen.
Hello, this is Dwayne up here in Canada. I just want to comment on the last show. It was May 9th. Anyway, you were talking about syncing programs, and just recently I started using a sync program called BitTorrent Sync. Basically, it's from the makers of BitTorrent, obviously, and it allows you to sync a folder with encrypted without very much configuration at all. Basically, you tell it that you want to, you install it, you get a code, you tell it where you want to sync, and then you put that code on another computer, and it just works. And it's unlimited storage because it's all synchronized between your systems. So it synchronizes from your desktop to your laptop to another computer if you want. Of course, you can only sync with what's online, but the fact that you can sync without it worrying that, you know, I guess it'd be for people who have more than one system, that they have that one that's on all the time or something like that. If they need backup, then Dropbox is best. But if you want to sync stuff and you have stuff already on like a backup server at home or something, definitely look into BitTorrent Sync. It is awesome. Love the show. Thanks. Bye.
Here is the next voicemail.
Hi, Mike. This is Brian from the UK. There's a product that's caught my attention called BitTorrent Sync, and it's from the same people who the standard BitTorrent, and you could find it at labs.bittorrent.com. Or just Google BitTorrent Sync. And I personally think this is going to be a Dropbox killer. I've got my issues with Dropbox because of the way they handle their security anyway. And this alleviates that whole problem, because this is a peer-to-peer setup where if you've got 2 computers in your home, you just give it the public key. I don't want to make this sound too difficult, because it's really simple. When I say a public key, it's literally a password, and you put it into one designated box on your other machine. It's really easy. The nice thing about it, it bypasses the cloud, it's peer-to-peer, and it is burning fast. Now, I don't know about everybody else, but I've got quite a big iTunes folder. For me, it's big. It's about 5 gigs. I managed to transfer that between two machines in about 9 minutes. Now, okay, bear in mind, one of my my laptop's got 8 gigs on it. But I've used it now for 3 weeks. Very, very impressed. We're going to have a situation where they're developing for Android and iOS. So you'll be able to sync in exactly the same way from your PC, but it cuts out the cloud. So that's why it's faster. If I could sync my phone directly with my PC, then I don't need to use products like AirDroid. So, yeah, hands down, it's an excellent product and really fast, and it's free. The only other thing I wanted to say was, Kate, last, I think it's 2-3 weeks ago, the products that you brought up about the browser infections, absolutely excellent. Kate, thanks for bringing it up, because just this week I've used two of those products. So thanks very much. Mike, you're doing an excellent job, and no doubt you'll hear from me shortly. It's Brian from the UK out.
Brian, thank you for taking the time to, A, thank Kate, because a lot of us, me included, I have been using those utilities every week, almost every day. And I'm getting lots of emails where a lot of you are thanking me and thanking Kate for actually recommending that. And I want to thank everybody that wrote in and sent me the great voicemails on recommending all those utilities. Now, BitTorrent Sync, getting some interesting feedback in the chat here. One, that it still could be an alpha. So you want to be careful, you know, before we jump in all the way. You know, maybe just start testing with it. And then with the way BitTorrent is used with all of the, you know, a lot of, you know, there being a, you know, BitTorrent activity is being used for, I guess, doing things illegally, where we want to do things here with syncing. And is it possible that they get shut down? So my recommendation with anything else, if it's free, be careful and start using it to just make sure, don't put all your eggs in one basket. I would not use this for a mission critical synchronization that's needed. You know, I would look into more advanced tool, you know, paid kind of synchronization, maybe setting up a VPN with where you want to sync, and then using a client to do the synchronization, like a sync back or something like that. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be setting that up with a new client who wants to synchronize a directory on a peer server to his desktop. And the minute I heard this from the voicemails here for the show, I thought, wow, BitTorrent Sync might be great. But now with these cautions, you just, with anything else, you got to balance it. And I'm going to test this out. You should always test. And then let's keep an eye as this thing moves from alpha to beta to a released product, and keep an eye and make sure that they're going to stay up and this is going to stay viable. So I want to thank everybody for recommending those utilities. You know, thank you, because this is great. And this is, again, what all this is about. And you recommending a utility that you like, or you've seen, you've played with, and you've used it, and we share that with everybody, and then we beat it up. You know, everybody uses it, and then send me your feedback on using it. You know, so this is great. And I want to hear about those favorite utilities that you have that I haven't talked about, or maybe you haven't heard it in a while. You're a new listener to the show and you're like, hey, Mike, you know, I use this great utility. Send it on in, because I know, you know what, there's thousands of people listening to this show that have not heard about it. I guarantee it. Keep that up. Something that came up in the chat, which is a great recommendation, and it's on your Gmail, I want to talk about this. It's a two-step verification that you can go into your settings and you can set that up just as an extra step. So if something gets hacked, if something happens, and I was using this example, I was telling everybody in the chat, my bank has a secondary step, a two-step verification that when I want to access my account online, not only do I go through answering, you know, a question and typing in a password, they have to send me a code on my cell phone. And that code, I got to put in the exact number or they won't let me in. And that's a great secondary step for verification. So use multi-step verifications whenever possible, because that is going to absolutely lock your account down to where, you know what, it is going to be virtually impossible to hack. Now, I'm sure there's ways to, but for right now, that is a great recommendation for that secondary level security. So thanks for bringing that up. Let's get to some email here. This is about that HP spooler problem I was having. And this is from Peter. Hi, Mike. The problem with the HP 1020 and 22 corrupting the print spooler has been around for some time. So your problem might not be related. The SDHP1020.dll was a build by two different companies, Xenographics Inc. and Marvel Semiconductor. The Marvel version crashes the print spooler when printing some PDF files. The Marvel driver is also the current and latest version you get when you download the driver from the HP website. What I have done is replace the Marvel file with the Xenographics one in the drivers directory. This is Peter. Peter, great feedback here, because you're right. I thought something definitely triggered this, though. And I don't know, maybe it was a driver's update for Windows, but it's just interesting that it all happened 1 week the day after Patch Tuesday. So that's what gave me pause on all of the updates that was happening on Patch Tuesday. But you're right, I have had this problem before where I just reinstall the driver and it fixes the problem. But for long term, that's a great idea. I like that. You know, just replacing one DLL is a lot easier. This is from Craig. And this is about my problem with trying to access a router where I don't have the admin password. And, you know, he recommends something about resetting it, but I can't. But I'm going to read this email anyway. Hey, Mike, this is Craig. You mentioned you needed some assistance with the router issue and you could not get it reset to the defaults. That's actually wasn't the problem. The problem is I don't have access to the admin password and I can't reset it. I got settings in there that I can't see and I need those settings. So I need to hack the admin password of the router. He says, I will assume that you already unplugged it and tried holding the reset button in 60 seconds a few times. I can't do that. So I was able to find the defaults to the router, and yes, they're very easy. The default IP address is 192.168.0.5. That's kind of weird. And it's usually a .1. And the default username is admin with a blank password. And I tried all the common passwords, you know, admin, password, blank, password of a capital P, admin of a capital A, all caps for the words. And I still can't get in. If you wanted to use the DDWRT interface, it is available for this router. I can research it and send you a link to the download. I do believe that you'll still need access to the router via the web browser in order to flash the device with the new OS. That's a great idea if it wasn't on a client's site on the premises and they're using this as a production device. I would not put that DDWRT, I'm going to get a lot of email from this, because I know a lot of you probably are using it in a production setting. I'm not going to do a hacked version of the firmware or something on a client's premises. I mean, I would do it for myself, you know, I'd do it for a friend or something, you know, at their home. But in a production office environment, I'm not going to do that. Someone in the chat mentioned telnetting into the router to gain access. I know with my routers, SMC and Linksys, that typically is disabled by default, but you might have luck with it. I have not tried that. I'm going to be on site tomorrow, and I'm going to give it another try. I have a couple things I'm going to look to do. Anyway, I really enjoyed your show and got a kick out of the stories you shared tonight. Looking forward to next week's show and hope you and Carrie can get together for another Tech Vets episode. We hope, now that Carrie's traveling, when he gets back home Memorial Day, I'm hoping for Tuesday or Wednesday night of next week that we will continue with Tech Vets, because we got a lot to talk about. This is from Gandalf, who I believe is also in the chat tonight. And this is cracking a D-Link router. In your latest show, you said you had a router you needed to crack. There is a known vulnerability in some D-Links using the HNAP protocol that makes them crackable. Others will need to be brute forced or dictionary attacked. If the HNAP crack does not work for your router, it did not work for my DIR655. The firmware was too new. I can provide an auto hotkey dictionary attack with the top 500 common passwords and 68,000 word list. Actually, that's pretty cool. Option one, here is the HNAP crack. I give it about a 10% chance of work. You can try it yourself, or I can do a remote session. I'm going to put that in the show notes, this link. Vulnerabilities reside in D-Link's implementation of the Home Networking Administration Protocol, HNAP. HNAP is a SOAP-based protocol that provides a common interface for administrators' control of a network device. HNAP is used by D-Link's Quick Router Setup Wizard, which comes on a CD with D-Link routers and can be used to view or change TCP/IP settings, administrator passwords, wireless configurations, and more. This crack must be done on the LAN side of the router, okay? And I have the details here on how to do this. Option two, I can send you my auto hotkey dictionary attack or do a remote session with you to set it up. If you want me to send it to you, I need some info from your router since I don't have the exact model. You know what? I am going to reply back with the exact model. I really appreciate that. And that might be worth looking into. I need you to go to the login page, right-click, view the source, and email me the HTML code. Then close the source window. Then on the login page, type in any password and press login. Now on the error invalid password page, look at the status bar of your browser. The bottom left corner has an IE. The third tab is blank or something HTTP. Send that to me. With all that info, I will customize my dictionary attack and send you the auto hotkey script and a word list you can try. This will only work if the password is one of the top 500 most common passwords or if it has a common dictionary word. If it is complex at all, like one upper, one number, one symbol, it will never work. And we would need to run a brute force, but that would take forever to run on a web interface like the D-Link. Let me know. Thank you, Gandalf. The reason I went over the details of this to give others ideas, if you're in the same situation as me, that's a great idea to try those common passwords so you can, you know, if you can't reset the router like me because you have a config that you need to preserve, that might be a great way to get into the D-Link. Now, with the Sonic Firewall, we're going to call the manufacturer and see what we can do about getting in. That might be a little tougher. And clearly, we have to be careful. We have issues here that I don't want to disrupt the business, but these are also actionable issues that the company might be able to go after their previous IT support. I don't know how far this is going to go. Anyway, I want to thank everybody for your response and helping me out with these issues. This is from Joe, and he says, Mike, can you please give me an update method of getting rid of the FBI scam virus? I've tried updated the free malware Vites, Avis, Super Anti Spyware with no success. I can get into safe mode with internet connection, however, no sound. When I reboot, the virus locks up my computer again. Reply to Joe with the following instructions. I sent a link to CombiFix. If you know your computer's affected, especially with the FBI scam that we're talking about, and there's lots of variants to this, what you need to do, you run CombiFix, you run that in safe mode. So you have to go to a computer where it's working properly and everything's okay. You download that, put it on a USB stick, pop the USB stick in, run your system, but hit the F8 key before the Windows graphic displays, pick safe mode with networking, log in, and then double-click Combo Fix to repair the computer. It will eliminate that. Depending on the variant that you got with the FBI scam, you will then need to at least run the Windows Repair all-in-one tool. That will take care of repairing everything. Simple steps, but it can get complicated. Follow all the instructions explicitly with Combo Fix, and you got to be patient. It takes time. I haven't heard back from Joe, but I sent him those instructions. And, of course, there's many other utilities that we recommend running, and we've talked about them the last few weeks. One program does not fix everything. Combo Fix will only remove the infections that it's looking for. You then have to run TDSS Killer. You need to run the Junkware Removers and all the other tools. There's a stack of utilities that you need to run in order to clean a computer. And you can do this within an hour, hour and a half. And it's still better than a nuke and pave and totally redoing the whole computer. I still believe that. And I had a nasty, nasty one that I'm going to leave for another show where I had to get into some advanced techniques. And I was able to quickly discover which file it was. And then I was able to replace the file with a dummy file. And then I was able to reboot and then finally be able to delete the file that none of the other programs would get rid of. This is from Hugo. I found out about your show a few months ago and been listening ever since. 2 weeks ago, you had a listener ask you regarding bridging two routers. I have some experience with this that may help. For WDS wireless distribution system to work correctly, you should have two routers that are the same model. I personally recommend the TP-Link TD-W8970. WDS does not work very well with different routers due to the different chipsets, as you may disable DHCP on the second router. However, also make sure that the security on both routers are the same. WPA2, PSK, always use the WPA2 for your wireless encryption, and make sure they're the same password. With the TP-Link model above, the WDS only needs to be configured on the second router and not on the main router. After a lot of testing, this was the best solution I could find. This week, you had a listener ask about configuring tablets in a corporate environment. I can only talk for iPads and iPhone, but check out this tool from Apple. This is what one that large corps use. And I have a support link from Apple, and I am going to put that in the show notes. Thank you very much. This question is from Mike. Hi, Mike. I've got a question on a keyboard issue and a website I would like to recommend for your listeners. First, the question. I have a user for the company I work for that I remotely support in a different state. Here is the issue they are having. They are unable to use the keyboard at the Windows XP logon screen. I can remote in and I can type, but they cannot. Here's more info for the troubleshooting. It's a USB keyboard. This occurs both in normal mode and safe mode. I've gone into device manager, uninstalled the device, and scanned for hardware changes to reinstall. It is a Dell computer, and I have installed the chipset drivers. I have run tweaking.com, Windows repair tool. I have run Malwarebytes and TDS Killer to verify no malware. Any ideas short of a nuke and pave? Now, he also said he tried using another keyboard. So he has used a known working keyboard. Here's what I wrote back. Because you have nothing else to lose, and I don't know if all of you know this or not, when you have a USB keyboard and mouse on a computer, do you know which USB ports you're supposed to plug them into? Because they're the first ones scanned when you're booting up, especially if you got to check with the BIOS or do anything. You plug them in to the two USB ports closest to the NIC adapter. On a Dell computer especially, where you would plug in your Ethernet cable, there are two USB ports right beside that. They are the USB ports that you should plug in your keyboard and your mouse. I have found many problems go away when you do that. So you have nothing to lose to just try those ports. So where are they plugging in the keyboard? Even though it shouldn't matter, I know. And then you also have to be patient. When you put a keyboard in or a mouse, and that system has never seen it before, especially XP, you need to wait a couple minutes to give the operating system a chance to use the default driver. There's a lot of things happening before you start to type your password, and you should just wait and make sure you've given it a proper time before you start to log in. Give the driver a chance to load. Great private message here from someone. I did not reply back asking if he checked the BIOS and went into the BIOS. And, you know, it's very difficult because he's remote. So if you don't have access, if a keyboard, you can't get a keyboard to work and he can't see the BIOS, how do we know that something hasn't been disabled? Like maybe someone went in there and disabled all the USB ports or something. Who knows? Very interesting situation there. I don't know how you would get access to the BIOS, so that could be very interesting. We're getting some great recommendations in the chat, and what I'm going to do is make sure that they are in the show notes for this problem with the keyboard. I really appreciate that, and I was just sent a link. Another suggestion is try a live CD. That's a great idea. Have them build a live CD from a distribution and then boot up and see if that helps. And does different drivers, and now you're talking a Linux distribution, which, you know, now you know whether you got some kind of a deeper hardware problem or not. So great ideas. For the website, this is sort of an in response to any of the questions you get about starting up a new business. One thing they might want to look at is Wave Accounting at waveapps.com. It's free accounting software that is all online-based. I have set it up, and it is very easy to use and has a good community behind it for support. Just something else for people to look at for a possible accounting solution. Mike, that is awesome. Thank you so much for the suggestions, and I hope we were able to help you resolve your keyboard problem remotely. Email me. Let me know what happened. This is from Fred, and it's about LLC question versus sole proprietor. This is very good advice. I am not an attorney, but I have had attorneys of different clients tell me a person doing service work and has an LLC does not get to shelter his or her assets from a lawsuit for work that you personally performed. To my knowledge, there is no way to protect personal assets to get out of personal liability when you are the person that causes the harm. The only possible solution is to gift the assets away to wife, kids, etc., which can cause other problems. Absolutely. But an LLC is good in protecting the Schedule C person when their employees cause the harm. By the way, LLC stands for Limited Liability Company, not Corporation. Oh, thank you for that correction. Always great shows. Thank you. Thank you for the time that you spend. And this is Fred, who is a CPA. Thank you very much. That is really good advice, which is that if you are an LLC and you're doing a Schedule C, you have an employee and they do something wrong, then that can protect you. So that's interesting. And that's why, you know what? Better to ask a lawyer and have the lawyer advise you when it gets to something as important as this. Why mess around? Spend the money, have an attorney advise you. That's the best advice. Just like for your taxes, I would never recommend that you try to do the taxes yourself or a friend or whoever. You make sure it's a legitimate CPA that takes care of small businesses, that understands the tax code and the tax law, that you can you know, sit down and prepare your taxes properly. Have a good accountant, a good CPA. This is from Mark. This is a Windows 8 start menu. Thank you for the hard work in providing the show. Hands down, my favorite podcast. Well, thank you very much for that. It seems that many people long for the traditional Windows start menu and related features apparently missing in Windows 8. You and the listeners have provided options for getting similar functionality back into Windows 8. I would suggest checking out the features built into Windows 8 OS that may help people come to embrace the changes Microsoft has made. As a Linux user that remembers MS-DOS, I don't believe I'm an MS fanboy, but I am a realist that knows how to make lemonade from what I'm given. This is the first OS from Redmond that I actually find value in the Windows key on my keyboard. Forgive me if you've covered this in the past. Check this out. The Windows and Q key, application search, like Launchy, Windows W, settings search, Windows F, file search, Windows C, the charm bar, Windows, it's the start menu, Windows D for desktop, and my absolute favorite for text, Windows X, perhaps the best system menu MS has ever offered for text. These features have won over some of my more reluctant users and eliminated many requests from them for the various start menu fixes. Windows 8 has a light footprint and excellent search features. Think Spotlight, and as Spotlights for Mac. And they refine the OS, its hiccups will become less of a problem. Becoming proficient with the organic interface will benefit all techs and eventually end users, in my humble opinion. Thanks again. Looking forward to the next show. Best regards, Mark from South Bend, Indiana. Great advice. Thank you. The reason I really needed to read that, it's just like when Microsoft came out with the new ribbon, that ribbon bar for Office, when they made the change from Office 2003 to Office 2007. And so many people hated the ribbon, and I ripped the ribbon. And then Winston Wolf sent me some great links I put out there on the reverse side. Winston presented the opposite opinion as to all of the work that went in to coming up with that new ribbon, and you need to move forward and embrace it. And that's what this email represents. I've spent so much time Windows 7-izing the Windows 8 for clients that maybe it's, you know, get them to move forward and embrace it. So we can do both. And here's what I recommend. You can put the fixes for Windows 7 in the shell, and then also show them the way to embrace the new menu and the Metro interface and the charms and everything that comes with Windows 8. I like Windows 8 because it's fast, it's efficient, it boots so quickly, and it's the fastest OS that Microsoft has put out. I used to put the old menu as a classic user interface that was free, the ribbon customizer, and put that alongside of the new ribbon interface for Office, sort of to wean users from the old menu to the new for Microsoft Office. You can't just throw them into the deep end of the pool and say swim. So what I like doing is let's wean them off by giving them a little bit of the crutch, maybe that menu or that a link to the past, and then encourage them and train to go forward so they have both. It's too drastic, and you need a path. And so what I'm doing is providing that path into getting to the new menu. Clearly, this is the way it's going to be, it looks like, for a long time. So I'm not a fan of the new interface. I need my start menu. But I think a lot of it is because it's so designed around a touchscreen interface. And if you don't have a touchscreen, you're not going to get the great benefit of that new interface. you need a touch screen. And I think I would embrace it if my monitors were touch or if my laptop had a touch screen interface. So unfortunately, that's going to be a while down the road. I'm not in a position to want to start replacing all my computers with touch screens. I'm not a touch fan, yet I embrace it on my iPad and my iPhone. Isn't that interesting? But I don't want it on my laptop, and I don't want it on my desktop. So I'm still tied to the traditional mouse. I'm sure a lot of us are, and that's where we have the issue in trying to embrace it. So you kind of have to give people both, I'm thinking here, because you got your traditional people like me that they don't like fingerprinting up their monitor and messing it all up. And then, you know, then you got people that want to do it. So why can't we have both? And I think that's what some of these great utilities offer us, is that option to be able to have both. I want to thank everybody for continuing to use my Amazon link, which is amazon.micnation.net. If you buy anything from Amazon, know anyone buying from Amazon, send them that link, bookmark that link. And when you go to Amazon, your price is the same. A small commission comes back to the Mike Tech Show and supports the show, and it's a great way to show your support. I really appreciate that. I want to thank everybody for downloading and staying subscribed to the show. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. If you're in the States and you're listening to this before the holiday, have a safe and happy holiday weekend. I will talk to you next week, same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everyone.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.